The following episode of About Last Night will be brought to you by The Slide Bar. The Slide Bar, our first, best, most wonderful sponsor. The Slide Bar is located in downtown Fullerton, California. It's got the best food, got live music, got hot chicks, drink specials all the time. It's an amazing place. I go there all the time.
Does it have dwarves?
It has dwarves because it's across the street from my house. So I will constantly...
And you're constantly housing dwarves.
I have a dwarf hostel at my house, so we just keep them in drawers.
Which, by the way, is coming out on iTunes next Tuesday.
Dwarf hostel? Yeah. New from Eli Roth. Dwarf hostel.
It does sound like some... Dude, it sounds like an incredible video game.
It does.
Right, why do we come up with all these great ideas that
I know.
Dwarves?
Commercials. Hopefully someone at EA Games is listening to this, and then it's going to give us...
Send us one free copy of Madden, and we'll go 50-50 on this idea.
Hey, sounds good to me. Yeah. That sounds like
sounds
a deal.
Great to me.
But check out the Slide Bar in downtown Fullerton. If ever you're in Southern California, visiting Southern California, don't want to deal with the L.A. crowds, the L.A. prices.
Can't come in here, bro, all right? You know Dave? Everybody knows Dave,
Knows Dave. You're only wearing one Ed Hardy shirt, douche. Get out. We require at least 5 Ed Hardy shirts with at least 3 collars.
Meanwhile, he's wearing a trench coat and a fedora. Looks like he got kicked out of the Newsies.
Exactly. Avoid the lines. Avoid the hassle. Nothing but great food, great music, and really great people. Check out the Slide Bar in downtown Fullerton. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the About Last Night show. And like we said before, really great episode. We're going to have a lot of fun today. Joining us right now is Jaleel White. Yeah. Jaleel White's over here, everybody. Yeah, fake applause from two guys. All right.
I'm going to hug that mic a little bit.
I'm going to cheer for myself. Hey.
First of all, Jaleel, thank you so much for showing up. We know that you got this show coming. Or not? It's the second season now coming out on Sci-Fi?
Second season, Total Blackout.
Total Blackout. And for those of you who haven't seen this show, first of all, look it up and see the clips online because it's basically a game show that occurs in – just total darkness, just absolute darkness, and you have contestants touching things and experience things. I mean, you could probably explain it a little better than I can.
Yeah, no, the show is basically people competing for cash prize in pitch black darkness, time challenges. So mm-hmm. they gotta, like, guess the weight of different things, but it may be like a sumo wrestler, and the second thing may be a camel, slightly agitated camel. But all of this is occurring in pitch black darkness. So when that camel makes that noise and starts growling.
Right.
Yeah, watching their faces in the total black, it almost looks like they're blind because their eyes are so wide, almost feeling like, if I open my eyes wide enough, I can see through the blackness.
And it's so funny you say that, though, because I've been in the dark room,
and
that's the sensation that you feel. Is you almost just keep trying to open your eyes. You're just like, I know I'm going to be able to see something. I know I'm going to be able to see something. It's like, nah, bro.
Your commentary over it is great.
The dark room is the actual set, not a black strip club. Just so we're completely clear on that.
But now it's going to be.
But it's just like it's one of those shows where as a viewer you watch it and you think, oh, it doesn't look that hard. They're just identifying stuff, but when you have that sense just taken away from you, and you
can't see
shit.
Because it's not something you think about putting yourself through.
Nah, it's really funny to see people go into the challenges so brave, and then literally as soon as the lights go out, we get a whole new person. Really, we get people to try to back out at the last minute, and it's like, I don't want to do this. And it's like, well, it's already dark, so you can't really see the exit signs.
I saw one guy, he put his hands in the tank, right, as it's called, and he was touching a rat, and this guy, I think it was episode 2 of the first season, the guy with spiky hair.
He was
freaking out. And then when he touched the rat and was almost on the verge of tears, and then there was a beanie in the second tank. Yeah. And he said to the beanie, he's like, wow, God, what is that? What is it, a dog? And I was like, what? A dog? First, like, a beanie is an interesting, texture, but, like, to think it was an animal. And then he had his face. This was incredible. I mean, you can't write this any better. He had his face in the human's butt, tank.
Yeah, I know. You're talking about Eddie. After a while, I started to know him personally.
Dude, right. But he had his face in the butt, and he's like, I know this smell. And it, I mean, it's just the things that you guys.
No, what he said was,
what is,
he smelled it, and then finally he was like, oh, it smells like ass.
Yeah.
And then it went ding, and he's like, oh, God, I should have known that.
I should have known that.
Yo, that's incredible.
It's like the most famous line ever from the show.
Oh, yeah. He was in the promos a lot.
We brought him back.
Oh, yeah?
We have an episode this year where we brought back our favorite.
Hug that mic if you don't
mind. Where we brought, well, how much money you want me to hug you?
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Sexy, man. We want that.
My lips are literally touching the
oh God. Selling that mic on eBay.
We brought back all of our favorite losers.
So
people that have lost terribly or famously, we brought back and let them battle it out, and that was a fun episode. So he was one of the people.
Dude, so good. So now second season, what can you like, what sort of changes?
Just bigger and better, man. You know, it's like every season the audience has us back. Just know that the network has more money to spend on us, and so,
all right.
So we're gonna torture them a little bit more. You know, we got the first year we had little dogs and puppies and you know, hens and stuff like that. And this year we got crocodiles and camels. So
no,
you know,
shit.
Keep it going, man.
And it's just amazing because I remember I saw one clip where a guy's feeling like a baby goat or something, and he knows. He's in his head. He's like, this is a cat. Like, this is a kitty cat. But when you're thinking cat and then you hear literally just that, meh, just that, he flipped out.
It was like
he just saw his family get shot in front of him. He just like went to that level of scared and terrified. Yeah, absolutely, right? You know, that's what I'm known for. And this show is on the Sci-Fi Channel. It starts Tuesday, October 30th. And I believe it's on 10, 9 Central. But like we were saying off air, everyone's got a DVR, you got a cable box, look the shit up.
Look, the show comes on tomorrow, just type in TOT, and if your computer is, you're not a computer, but if your TV is not from 1997, it should begin to tell you when the show comes on.
And you, like, and I'm not just saying this because you hear, like, it's so tough for shows to become, be original these days, man. It's like, there's never been anything like this, and obviously, the element of people loving to see people be scared or go through something traumatic, but it's like it's fun. It's lighthearted. It's like there's nothing so dangerous. Like they're never going to, you know.
You know, obviously, man, I'm just trying to grow with the times, and you know, I still love to act and I still love to, you know, performing, but more importantly, in this age of media where it's just coming at us from so many different directions, mm-hmm. I just feel grateful to be a part of any television or any form of media that people just naturally want.
Yep. Sure.
I don't have to beg people to watch this show. I pass through TSA, you know, airports, and people are, you know, telling me about it. And
that's
know,
great.
They love tweeting about the show. So that's one of the more fun things even for me is when the show begins, you know, to premiere.
Totally.
Is, you know, sometimes I look at some of the crazy comments that are even coming through on Twitter. And, you know, that's exciting these days because it's like all of a sudden Twitter just took water cooler conversation. You know, that's how I was born. That's how I was born playing the character of Steve Urkel.
Yep.
It's like in the first season I did that show as a kid, I think the ratings were like in like, we were like, the show Family Matters was like a low 60s show. And then literally over the course of 9 episodes, we went to almost cracking the top 10.
Oh, God.
So
damn.
It's like, so
it's unbelievable.
Like, so it's like, you know, my dad would like just get the LA Times every week when it was relevant to do that. and he was like, yeah, we're number 50 this week. And then we're number 41. And then
that's
we're number 37.
Insane to just see this line.
And all that is that's Twitter before Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter. Totally.
That's people actually walking around saying, did you see this shit?
Yeah, exactly.
And what's crazy about like the numbers on that show and how successful it was and is that there wasn't all the social media. And there wasn't the ways for people to go, oh, you remember that one episode? And let me go back and watch it 2 seconds later on my phone. Like,
exactly.
You had to sit down and watch. You couldn't DVR it.
And there was also appointment television. You know, back in the day, if something came on, you had to be home or you had to get near TV and watch it.
It's a testament to the show.
Hey,
my favorite show, I would never actually be there at the same time it comes on to watch it.
You're like, I'll watch it a month later when I got nothing to do for a whole weekend, right?
Exactly.
I remember all Breaking Bad's in one day.
I remember, of course, Family Matters was on TGIF, but I remember it was on KTLA here, and it was something called Way Cool Weekdays, which I would go home right after school, and from like 3 to like 4:30.
Get your Way Cool on.
Yeah, it was like You Guys, it was Saved by the Bell, and it was Full House, like back to back to back.
Dude, what a lineup.
That's how I got associated with that bastard. You know what? No, seriously, because it was like when I did the show all those years, it was like nobody would ever talk about Screech or any of that.
Right.
So I'm like, and now I'm starting to dawn on me. It was like, you know what? In syndication, we really got paired with those efforts.
Yes, you did.
And that's how people started making
that's
correlation.
Totally
you just literally helped me figure something out because I'm like, we were prime time.
We were daytime soap.
Yeah,
we were daytime soap.
Daytime kitty soap. What the heck, man?
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. No, I just remember that.
Okay, much respect. Much respect to Mario and the guys. Whatever. Now I get it. Okay. So
there you go.
We got LinkedIn syndication. That's how.
Hey, all I know is Screech can't ball like you. So
yeah, dude.
No,
all good.
You don't want to see me in basketball.
Well, we don't want to see you, dude. I gotta beg to differ, man. That episode when you came in the game, and I don't know who was that got injured, right? But then you had to step in. Like I was just watching it last night. And that's the thing that's, like, really impressive about those episodes because, you know, Fresh Prince did one where Will Smith came on Carlton's team and saved the game. And he's got decent skills. But, like, you, I don't know how old you were in that episode. Do you remember?
I mean, I was somewhere around 15 or something like that.
Dude,
probably.
Like, dude's got game. Yo, man, your crossover, you were doing the, like, the fast legs, like, back and forth. Through the, like, I mean, that was ridiculous, dude.
And that, I mean, and, it, and I'm ashamed to say, but that probably, that episode probably instilled racist thoughts in me. Because because I would walk around and just assume that every black kid could play basketball. Because I'm like, fuck, Urkel can ball. If Urkel can ball, I'm picking the black dude first. Yeah, and the kid's like, I've never picked a ball in my life.
You fool.
But, it was just so cool to watch, and a lot of people don't realize that you, when your first episode, you were just brought on kind of just as a not a bit part, but like a one time thing, right?
Yeah, no, I was just supposed to be a guest spot, and I ended up sticking around.
Wow,
and nine seasons, dude. Yeah. Seinfeld went nine seasons.
Yeah, he did.
I want to say this real quick, and then we'll move on. But I feel like for how big you get in any. Piece of the entertainment business, you know, I feel like you get your own cereal, you get your own shoe. Right. There's like certain things to kind of be like, wow, I've kind of like become really a larger than life character. My mom bought me a doll of you for my birthday. And I know that sounds creepy because if I said last week, then yeah, you'd probably walk out of here in a few minutes.
Nah, no trip. But I had a Mr. T doll I cared really about.
There you go.
There you go.
You know what I'm talking about.
So I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yo, like, I just got to know, like, because for me, it was like, I mean, dude, the doll was unbelievable. And it was like the string and I think it was your voice.
Yeah.
Dude, and that's, I don't know, what is it like when that came out? And I don't know how old you were. But it's got to be even crazier as a kid to be like, there's a doll of me. I have my own dolls of other figures.
Yeah, no, it's very surreal, man. It's very surreal. But you stick around the business long enough, and it humbles you. And you're like, oh, that effing doll.
I'm sure.
Everything is in the moment at the time. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. And even when I see dolls now still, because people will come up to me and have me sign them.
Wow.
You know, now I can at least enjoy the nostalgia of it. I'm particularly enjoying in my career right now, though, that wherever I walk, I get a variance of reactions that are just all over the spectrum of what I've done.
Well,
so,
sure.
So some people will come up to me like now, like I can't even be in a frozen food section at a supermarket and not have like three women come up to me and talk about Dancing with the Stars.
Awesome.
You know, my daughter is just like, you know, she thinks I'm a dancer. My daughter's 3 years old, and because I did the CeeLo Green video.
Yeah. It's incredible, by the way.
And thank you.
Yeah.
And I did that video, and she
shot that at Universal, right?
Yeah.
That's why he's so comfortable sitting here with me. He's worked with CeeLo Green. He's used to being around midgets. So, so you're fine. So you're fine.
Oh, you're going in. Do you have a zinger button you press when you
exactly. Well, and I think that's what separates you from any, like, the guys that played Horseshack or Dustin Diamond on Screech or Kramer, other iconic parts on television, is you've been able to move on and do other things. Like
it's hard.
I'm sure it is.
You're about to be able to pay your bills first, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I can't imagine how tired you must be of, like, walking to a casting office and then, like, the casting directors just look at you, and you just see it in their eyes. They're just looking at you going, do the voice,
you know,
do the voice.
I keep it real. It was like, you know, I definitely had to deal with that in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to deal with that anymore now. Now, now at this point, like, you know, casting directors are seeing the other things that I'm doing also, mm-hmm. and, they're checking my manager's availability. But to live the arc of that,
sure.
Like I said, it's humbling, and, you know, it just makes you appreciate what it is to continue to work in our business, though, for a long, long period of time.
Yeah, because you literally haven't stopped working since 12? or even before that?
Well,
you were
doing
stuff.
In the business since I was three. So, you know, commercials and Jefferson's episodes and stuff like that I've done since I was 3 years old. But I worked consistently from, you know, I did the show from 12 to 21.
Yeah.
And I did another show on UPN that I don't really like to talk about too much.
Fair enough. I don't think anyone likes to talk about UPN in general very much, man. So I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and take that.
Right. I don't really feel too much like a loser when the entire network doesn't exist anymore. Right?
You're like, well, you know what? Maybe it wasn't just me.
You know. Monkeys with crayons. It wasn't just me. So
it's all good, man.
But that was ages ago, and that was my early 20s. And you know, obviously, I had like a just growing up. You know, I, like, even when I talk to young people now, I'm like, you know, when people graduate, used to graduate from college thinking people were gonna put them in charge of shit. You know, I'm sorry, can I say?
No, don't curse. Fuck shit. Curse all you want. You're fine
like,
here.
It's like people ask me.
Steve Urkel curses
on the
Film
About
at 11.
Last Night podcast.
Woo! But even when I talk to young people now, you know, at high schools or even colleges or whatever, I come right out the gate. I tell them, I say, look, you guys got to understand something. You're going to graduate here, and nobody's going to put you in charge of anything.
Yeah. Nope.
Like, as a matter of fact,
it's all on you.
They're going to try to give you the worst, most humiliating job the company can give you.
Yeah.
You got to get past that
and
become a person that's trustworthy and respectful of the chain of command.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's really what I lived throughout my 20s. And, you know, now I'm in my 30s. I'm a dad now. I got a 3-year-old. And, you know, life's different. And, you know, I got called in by Sci-Fi one day and they said, hold this tarantula. We're thinking about putting you on the show.
Hold this tarantula? That's what the audition was like?
Yeah, no.
Hollywood for you, man.
It was crazy. To this day, I've never been able to make sense of the audition to become the host of Total Blackout.
Because, take us through it real quick.
Because they pulled me into a, they had me come to a parking garage that they had outfitted to look really, you know, industrial.
Okay.
And like, spooky.
Yeah.
And then they had a Wrangler there, and they basically had all this stuff they wanted me to read from a teleprompter. But they said, look, while you're doing that, we just want you to hold this big-ass tarantula in your right hand. And the tarantula is like as big as a gerbil. And it's like immediately, it's like you have one of those moments where you're like, you know what, if I'm 23 years old and, you know, coming off the earnings that I had too, I'd have been like, you know, I'm not sure I want to hold that tarantula.
Right.
And immediately I was just kind of like, I thought about my daughter and I thought about the tuition.
Bills started piling up.
And I'm like, you know what, if the tarantula actually were to bite you, that could be a good thing too.
Lawsuit.
I know, Sapphire's got coin, they got wrestling. Shoot.
I'm like, literally, I'm like, all right, they give me this tarantula that, no joke, is as big as my freaking hand. And I'm just like, Jay, don't even look at it. Just look at the teleprompter, and you can feel it crawling creepy up your arm. And I finished it, and they were like, oh, man, that was great. It's like, great. So when I got the job, I'm like, I get to the set, and I'm like, all right, where's the tarantula? They're like, oh, no, that's for the contestants. Like, you effort. So basically,
there's no.
You just did that to see if I was like, you know, hard to work with.
If you can't deal with a tarantula, I don't know how he's going to be at the craft service. You know what?
I do the same thing on my first dates. I just give my date a tarantula, and if they can hold it for 10 minutes, I know that they'll have good experiences with my balls. So it's fine, and you know, then they pass the test.
I've released a rat into the bedroom to see what kind of reaction I get. You know,
it really lets you know from
put
the
a spider in the bathroom and let her scream and be like, get that.
Or better yet, put a dwarf dressed as a spider in the bathroom.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, it's old.
Sometimes she goes, you know what? Take the spider outfit off. I never thought you'd bring one of these guys in the bedroom.
I'm so scared of the day. Well, I don't know if I'm scared, just looking forward to the day when I'm dating a tall woman. She's going to be living in my house. There's going to be a noise. It's going to be her downstairs. She's going to look at me like, go handle it. I'm like, bitch, you're 5'8". I'm 4'0". Go do it.
I would imagine you could pull chicks easy, though, because you're really right at coochie eating height.
Yes! You would be correct, sir. You would be correct, sir. Hey, you know what? We all have our angles to play. You were able to play the Stefan Urkel angle for a while, right, which worked very well for you. And then I play my card, you know? I'm sure those women out there listening to this podcast are like, man, if I was in that room right now, I could knock off Jew, Urkel, and Midget off my bucket list.
Wow.
That would be
something. It's got to be at least number 17 on
three of us,
bucket list.
The three of us do collectively make up one hell of a bucket list.
Right?
One hell of a bucket list. Now, is that something that you encountered during the show or after the show? Like, women would either just look at you as that character, have weird sort of fetishes, or like, would you try to seek women out that kind of avoided it, or,
you know, it's interesting. I had a lightning moment when it came to women one time. I was walking out of a basketball game at the Forum. Great Western Forum.
Right? So much better than Staples.
Inglewood, California. You were scared walking home.
These two chicks were walking by me, and they were kind of good looking. They really were, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. And mind you, this is like my early 20s. And, you know, before any flirtations could even jump off, it was just like, you know, one of them audibly says, like, oh, it's Urkel, right? And it was like, you know, when it's said in that particular context, it's almost kind of a turnoff for
me. Totally.
Oh, absolutely.
It just is. It's like, all right. And so it was like, I just, you know, at that point, I almost turned into, like, the mayor of a small town. I just wave at that guy because I don't know which direction he's going to vote.
Sure.
There you go. Kiss the baby.
Exactly. And then I chirped my car. It was parked right there. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I literally heard the audible gas, like, oh, wait.
Because I
was getting in my car.
Because they thought, like, you actually drove around the BMW Isetta.
Somehow people didn't associate, you know, the job that I was doing with, you know, a guy that's making a good living doing it.
Wow, sure.
And that definitely affected my 20s. And, like, I have even since gotten rid of my home and moved and everything and made changes for my daughter because some of these things were honestly just attracting bad people.
Yeah,
I bet. That were like coming to this realization and then just kind of had their hand out immediately.
Yeah.
And,
so you had like 97 first cousins that were calling you up like, hey, man, baby needs braces.
Comes with the territory, but it's unfair some of the positions you get put in sometimes, but I guess you're like, that's... It comes with it, right?
I mean, Hey, man, you know what? Hey, look, at the end of the day, look, I'm a guy. I like to have fun. Get it how you live. You know, so, but,
totally.
But at the same time, you know, sometimes, you know, just at different points in your life, especially where I'm at right now, I'm just like, I try to, as soon as I hear certain, you know, cues, I almost just kind of like shut it down.
Yep.
She's a problem. Yeah. Shut it down. I will fall asleep naked next to her, and she will put my ass on the internet.
There you go. Wow. You know what? That's something that you don't even consider.
You don't, man.
That's something you don't even consider. Like, wow. If I get lucky enough to go home with a girl and go back to her place, I don't really have to worry about showing up on a website with like a celebrity sex tape ass in the bed or whatever, like a tweet, especially with Twitter.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Let's say the girl's drunk. She just, you know, looks over and tweets a pic of you.
Oh, man. No, I put out a tweet not too long ago where I was just like, baby, you know, we got a real hot connection and everything, but you tweet too much. You tweet too much.
Sounds like a great R&B song.
You tweet too much.
I stop tweeting, girl.
I think that's chapter 97 of R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet right there.
You tweet too much.
You tweet too much. And Chuck is tweeting too much, and Andrew's coming in, and Pimp Lucius is in the closet. Yes, there is actually a character named Pimp Lucius. I listen to Trapped in the Closet. There's new episodes coming out. I'm very excited. That's my side thing.
People are really gassed about that. I actually heard a chick talking about that the other day. Like, yo, it's more Trapped in the Closet.
That was huge, man.
I got all 14.
There were so many.
It's a collection.
These, man.
What are you going to do? Now, when you got the call to do, like, a Dancing with the Stars, was your immediate reaction, hell yeah, or did you have hesitations about it, or did you just – or what was that like for you?
My immediate reaction was a visceral no. Mm-hmm. And
because you knew the show.
I knew the show. I have no problems admitting this. I was actually trying to live my life and avoid doing that show ever.
Mm-hmm, right.
And
I think, you get to a certain point there, so you're like, I'm not going to do Celebrity Rehab. I'm not going
to
Right, and they asked me to be on that show, too, and they really didn't have a problem that I don't have a drug problem. They're like, we can write around that.
I mean, I know the whole basis of our show is, like, celebrities with addictions, but you can just come on.
But they'd maybe, like, maybe if we put you around a bunch of druggies, you'll become a druggie, and that'll be great TV.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But seriously, I was asked to be on that show.
Wow.
And that because people, a lot of people don't understand the manipulation behind reality TV.
Yeah, dude, sure.
It's all produced.
And I don't care how much I talk about it here. There's just a faction of our country that's just going to be like, no. No.
No, all that stuff happens to Kim Kardashian as the cameras are rolling.
Kim was in love with that boy. And then she changed it in her mind.
Yeah. Can I? Yeah. Well, it's because people don't realize that if you, I mean, I know everyone thinks like, oh, my life could be a reality show.
Right.
No, because if a camera just filmed you for 24 hours straight, for me, it'd be a lot of like watching Dexter and masturbating. Yeah. Sometimes at the same time, which
making cookies, and living in trees.
Hit the zinger button. Hit the zinger button.
So that's not.
Which, by the way, there's a channel out there somewhere that's going, that's actually not a bad idea.
some executive going, get me a midget who watches Dexter.
Now that's a good evening though. Actually, as long as you add a good plate of food to that, that's a great evening.
I'm fine with it. It's good. Totally. But you're right. Like these sorts of reality shows have to be set up and. I mean, and some of these celebrity-driven shows are getting ridiculous. I literally heard this, and this
Honey
is,
Boo Boo is off the chain.
Well, yeah.
Do you like it?
You know what?
If, right now.
I mean, absolutely not. Yeah. You know, but it's like.
but you can't stop watching.
But again, exactly. But I'm still. It's like just because I can't stop watching something, does that mean I'm really going to start lining up cars outside of, you know, and just making them crash into each other and be like, ooh, another guy died? You know, it's like, at what point are we going to take, you know, society into account? Like, literally, I watched that little girl, and it's like, I think that girl has some clinical issues. Like, and she's really, like, everybody's catering to her.
Feeding into it.
Yeah, they're feeding into it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I saw her on. I forgot. I think it was Dr. Oz.
Let me pull this up a little bit.
She was on the Dr. Drew show.
Dr. Drew, yeah.
And she fell asleep.
No, she wasn't sleeping.
Well, she acted.
That little hooker wasn't sleeping. She was like, you know, she's like, he's asking her questions, and this is an age where you're trying to teach kids to, like, you know, respect adults, look in the eye, and answer, and she's just like right in his face. I'm sleeping. I'm bored by you and all my fans. And it's like, holy crap. Like, you're supposed to get an ass whooping when that happens.
But no,
man.
Everyone's like, oh my God, she's so honest as a kid. Yeah. And she's so.
The mom's
brave.
Laughing, going, more go-go juice.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, obviously, if. And it's always going to be entertaining if somebody puts Mountain Dew and Red Bull and just gives it to any kid. That's
sure.
Like, oh, that's hilarious. But, you know, I'm like, wow. You know, when you really think that this is the modern child star.
Right.
Dude,
no, that's
there is no bigger child star in our country right now than Honey Boo Boo.
Right.
I mean, I was just at a party and, like,
everybody knows
hot 25-year-old chick in the room was like, I'm going as Honey Boo Boo.
Oh, my God.
I'm going as June. Oh.
And you know what's sad about it is that America is great at giving people their 10 minutes of fame or whatever and obsessing about something like that for a little bit. But then, shit, man, it's going to fade away and she's going to go back to being.
It depends. I will say this. It depends because Honey Boo Boo is selling herself to be a train wreck.
Yeah. Right.
So.
She's going to continue to be a train
so
wreck.
So, as long.
Older.
Yeah, she's going to continue to be a train wreck. So, as long as the train just.
Keeps falling off the tracks.
Exactly.
She will lose her career if it's like, on this season, Honey Boo Boo actually gets into college. Well, fuck that. I'm not watching anymore.
You got what I was trying to say. As long as the girl stays on the path of doing, you know, just radically retarded shit, she could. Be very successful.
Yeah, you're right, dude. That's
scary. But if she ever tries
to
do
us interviewing Honey Boo, would be like, so, really great to have you here.
So, what's going on? Diabetes by age 8. That's a new record, right?
Exactly, man. That's crazy
now,
to think about that.
And, so like, you see Honey Boo Boo and you see, like, the mom and how she kind of caters into it and how she's not stopping it.
Yeah, that's a big problem of it.
When you when you were in your time of, like, just going through the child star stuff, did you have that kind of strong influence that kept you level?
Yeah, your parents were
no,
were
I had parents that were very... very about my behavior.
That's
and
good.
As a matter of fact, in 9 years, I only had one sick day. And, and it was perceived to be a contract holdout. And it was really my mother trying to discipline me. And it was actually one of the funniest days on the show.
Wow.
My mom and I were kind of going at it. And I still, even to this day, I contend that you were not a very fair mom. <You're not> you know, she was just obsessed with control. What I didn't understand was that she was actually training me for marriage.
That's all the mother's plot.
And since I never came around, that's why I'm not married. I was like, oh, I get it. You have to let the woman do whatever the fuck she wants to do.
Okay.
And then you'll have a happy marriage. Uh-huh. Okay, okay.
I'm not cool with that.
So,
it's like a never-ending improv game. Yes, and I'll do this for you, baby.
Right. And so we were really kind of going at it, and just verbally, you know, and mm-hmm. stuff, and me talking back and just not giving her the last word.
Sure.
And then finally she came to my room one day, and she was like, you know what, your dad and I have talked about this, and you know we've talked about this, so, you know, you're not going to work tomorrow. We're going to just start taking away days of work. And it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, my parents
wow.
are like, you're trying to get me fired?
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the very next day, no, it was really hilarious, though, is because I was in so many scenes, though, mm-hmm. you know, I was in probably 11 out of 12 that week. And
wow.
They just canceled work the next day.
For everybody.
They canceled work for everybody.
Damn.
So, like,
dude, that,
so they canceled.
Your mom was like, fuck
so,
yeah.
So my mom was, oh, no. But the thing is, my mom didn't have the courage to tell them what she had really done. So she told me that. But she told them I was sick. So what that resulted in was, I remember the producers sent me, mm-hmm. like, mounds of, like, canned popcorn and balloons, and at that time, $500 in Blockbuster gift certificates.
That's wow. huge, man.
Which, by the way, was a huge deal.
And right, and like, and Bob Iger, who was then running ABC, he wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, God as he is now,
right,
but
he
sent me more gift certificates from ABC, and
wow.
then they wanted to send the doctor to the house, and my mom was like, no, we have our own doctor, we'll go to our own doctor.
We got some Dayquil, he's cool, man.
He's cool. So I was like, I think I probably collected on that one sick day over $1,000 in gifts. And I'm just kind of like, at that point, I was just kind of like this kid on a couch folding my arms like, yeah.
I'm going to be sick tomorrow, too. Yeah. Shit.
You know not to mess with the machine now. You know
not to. Maybe if I'm sick tomorrow, I can get some Applebee's gift certificates.
Right?
You make sure this goose keeps laying golden eggs, motherfucker.
I had a couple moments. I remember they gave me the penthouse at the top of the Trump Plaza Hotel for the release of the doll, as a matter of fact. Hasbro popped for that. And, I mean, this place is ridiculous. It's like 8,000 square feet at the top of New York.
You invited a bunch of friends out?
And I'm 14 years old. I just
bossed
my parents around and was like, you get that bedroom. and that's what happened is I looked at the tape because my dad wanted to get a videotape. He went and rented a video camera at that point to remember it. And I never watched it. I was a complete asshole.
Really?
You
watched it once?
I watched it once. They put it on for like a Thanksgiving when I was like in my early 20s. And you know, like, and I was like, oh, remember, let's go look at when we stayed at the Plaza. And
it's like Beethoven's Second. You watch it once, you're like, I get it. It's a shitty movie.
And it was like,
by the way.
My behavior was just so off the chain. I was going through like a quick phase. Fortunately, it happened quickly for me, and mm-hmm. I was done with
it. But now, how much of that do you think was because of, like you're saying, like, I mean, having that many yes men around you and people at your beck and call take care of you is obviously for anybody going to inflate the ego a little bit. But as a kid, you're already kind of, 14 is a very impressionable, like, you start to kind of think like, hey, I'm kind of an adult parent already.
Yeah.
So
I'm telling you, I have no problems with me. I was a complete jackass. And
like,
anything
that you can say, like, what you were doing to your parents, or was it merely just like, hey, you're going to sleep there and you got to wake up at 6 and make me bake milkshakes?
I was just, you know, they had basically filled the living room with everything that I loved.
Yeah.
So they
At that
time, it was like
Nintendo
jerseys from Knicks players that were my favorite that were signed.
Charles Oakley.
Nintendo. He's on a whole nother level. Yeah. He's like, no, Nintendo fucker. Charles Oakley and Patrick Ewing came and played one-on-one in my living room.
That weekend, I remember Charles Oakley gave me tickets to the game.
Are you kidding me?
No, I know.
That's a crazy rep. Do you really?
Yes, I know.
I mean, I know him because I'm a huge fan of his, you know, his hustle.
Nah,
his play. But that was a crazy reference. And you're friends with him?
Yeah. I grew up with Oak, man.
Jesus.
Oak was good peoples, man.
Dude, he was unbelievable.
If I see Oak right now, we take it back. I mean, I went to like 9.
Well, please welcome Charles Oakley. This is your life, Jaleel White.
I follow him on Twitter, as a matter of fact.
Yo, there's one dude. There's a handful of dudes like that busted their ass night in, night out, that you're just like, God, man, that didn't get a championship.
Yeah. I was a fan of the game, man. You know,
like Adam Morrison got
it. When it comes to basketball, stop that. Don't even go there.
Yeah, you're right.
Actually, I'm a Bruin, so we gave him his worst defeat he's ever tasted.
Dude, crying.
Right?
Oh, that's
I was
right.
There. I was
Were you
there.
Really?
I was
How happy.
I remember
you.
That.
I him mean, and that was, little... That's probably, hands down, the greatest college basketball game I've ever seen in person.
Yep.
Him and his little mushroom cut.
Wait, who was on the
sobbing.
UCLA team?
I think it was Jordan Farmar that year.
Yeah. And with Kevin? No, Love was.
No. Kevin Love wasn't there
years
yet.
Later.
He wasn't there yet.
All right, we're back. There's, I mean, we could talk basketball for hours. Wait, so All right, so you had the Knicks jerseys in the room.
Yeah, right? they had just filled my living room with Knicks jerseys and, you know, Yankee paraphernalia and, again, gift certificates to go here, there, everywhere. And it's just, you know, the cool thing about my personality that I'm very proud of, actually, is that, you know, I take notes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that means in actor terms, the terminology is sometimes a director will tell an actor to do something differently, and then the actor goes right back in the scene and does it exactly the same way, but in his mind, he did it differently.
Right.
And that's when the director whispers to the producer, we have to recast. So, but I take notes even about myself in life. So when I saw that videotape even in my early 20s, I'm obviously I'd already changed, though.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a confirmation of things that I had felt were, you know, going on during that period of my life or whatever.
Right.
And fortunately, I outgrew it.
Yeah. Do you feel fortunate that you went through that phase when there wasn't social media and TMZ and all that jazz?
Hey, look, I was hanging out with Michael Jordan one night, and he says that's a normal way to start a story.
Ever.
It's not even being braggadocious.
No, it's
a great story though. And he was just like, I seriously, if I had played ball during the Facebook era, I would have made it.
Wow.
He's like, wow,
dude, he meant that.
He's like, I would have made it.
Just because every move that he did.
I'm not going to go into details.
Sure,
sure,
like,
man.
I would have made it. I would have made it. So it's like, you know, I'm one of those kind of people, especially where I'm like, I don't like necessarily going backstage too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to see the chicks putting on the extensions before, you know, in makeup and hair before they go present the Oscar. That's the whole point of getting dressed up. I don't have to look at you that way. You know? But we live
you
in
want
this,
the show.
Yeah, yeah, we live in this new world now. It's just kind of like this, you know, all information world, and it's just TMI.
Yeah.
And,
way too much.
And, you know, I'm so happy I didn't have to go to college with that. I mean, I saw James Franco, matter of fact, online. I guess he fell asleep in, like, some UCLA class.
Mm-hmm.
And some a-hole freaking snapped him. Boom, put it up online. Dude. James Franco sleeps in class. You know, I slept in a couple class. Matter of fact, I just got into an argument with a teacher over having slept in a class one time.
Well, maybe you should be more interesting, man.
Yeah, right. You know, because he called me out.
Talk more about Honey Boo Boo.
I thought it was – I'd worked really late the night before. I wasn't snoring, and I kind of thought it was a dick move for him to call me out. I'm one of your best students in here, man. I worked late.
Yeah, dude.
But we kissed and made up. We kissed on the lips, too. It was cool. And, you know, Professor Bernardi to this day is one of my favorite professors I ever had in college.
You majored in film and television.
Yeah, I went to UCLA Film School, School of Film and Television.
Good program?
Really cool program. When I look back at college, though, I kind of laugh. I laugh at the fact that they convince all these people that by going to this school, they're going to have jobs.
Because Adam, with your degree in theater from USC.
Yeah, Julia, I don't know if you know, but I was in Vinegar Tom, which gets you fucking when you graduate. You go into a casting office.
You're the Shakespeare in the Park people.
I was jumping into fountains being like, and on a day when the nights have gotten dark, people are like, who the fuck are these kids?
You got laid though.
I mean, theater girls are incredible.
Girls are incredible.
And guess what?
They have to get into character.
Oh yeah. Straight theater dudes who play sports, myself.
Clean up.
I mean, I'm surrounded by a lot of non-straight theater men, which is great and fine. Mm-hmm. A lot of my best friends.
Yeah.
But guess what? The girls don't want to have sex with them.
Exactly.
No competition.
Exactly.
It's perfect.
Are you that tied into the USC-UCLA rivalry?
During the week that it occurs. Otherwise, I know a lot of, you know, well-paid USC people, and I like hanging out with them.
I call them producers. They're not bad.
But during the week that it occurs, man.
Yeah.
Hey,
of course.
They're not going to paint our bear.
Right. Yeah, you guys would wrap our statue up.
Yeah.
The Tommy Trojan.
Right, exactly. Well, and
sometimes wrap Brad up.
I'm kind of like the new unofficial mascot. It's scary.
I thought it was more disrespectful what they did this year.
What they do this year?
They put that big billboard up of Matt Barkley in Westwood.
Oh, shit.
Some
that's actually kind of genius.
Some rich donors.
Was he a Diddy Reese or something? Yeah, just chowing down?
No, it was just a giant, like, USC Pride billboard that was, like, right in the middle of Westwood.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, who sold this?
USC put it up.
USC put it up.
Oh, wow.
And so it was like, you know, they paid for it. You know, obviously, you see these Clear Channel billboards everywhere where somebody paid for it. And, you know, it was just one of those kind of things that after a while, you know, Jim Moore Jr., the new coach or whatever, was just like, look, we got rich people around here too. Somebody do something about that.
Someone step the fuck up. Yeah. Well, what I've noticed is, like, I'm
kind of like you, where it's like, yeah, if I find out someone goes to UCLA, yeah, sure, I'll do a little whatever the hell. But who gives a shit?
Yeah, people make side jokes all the time. They go, oh, like, I'll be at a meet somebody, and they'll be like, oh, you're a Trojan, huh? Well, I guess it is where this conversation stops. And I'm like, all right, man. Right. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, we're adults.
Yeah, but I feel most people that take it the most seriously are people that didn't even go to the school.
Totally. Oh, yeah, that's hilarious. You said that.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I had a dude in my fantasy league, my fantasy basketball league, for years, man. Uh-huh. You know, you show up to the draft wearing all these USC
We'll
stuff.
Call him Charles Oakley for the sake of this story.
And he would be, every week he would talk in his fantasy league. Actually, the way it worked out was it was a bunch of UCLA guys and a bunch of SC guys. So for that particular week, we really did go at each other, like Mike Sherrard and Ken Norton Jr.
There you go.
Fantasy league. And, you know, it was a bunch of other USC guys.
He's got Ken Norton Jr. in his fantasy league.
The loudest guy.
I know Henry Winkler.
The loudest guy.
Yeah.
Did not go to SE. Like, he crossed the line, you know, talking crap one end time, and I called up another guy and was like, look, I need to know some things about this cat so I could go ahead. And he was like, he didn't go to SE.
He went to community college.
Are you serious?
Wow.
Duh, there are so many, like, that's why I can't even mess with the tailgate crowd, man.
No, it's, yeah.
Half the people in the parking lot, they didn't go to the school. That's why they're in the parking lot.
You go the craziest. Now, you're in a fantasy basketball league.
I was in a fantasy basketball league. Now I just do fantasy football. Fantasy basketball is just
it's too much because it's daily.
It's too much.
I did it 1 year. I did the draft. It was unbelievable. I was like, hey, where's Danny Manning? And but then I couldn't. I'd do like the first four games. And then my buddies would hit me up. They're like, dude, you got.
Four times a year, guaranteed, I forgot to set my lineup.
Yeah, dude,
and I end up losing like 200 points just haunt me in my conscience forever.
Yeah, yeah. It's so weird because it's one of those things. Fantasy sports has just blown up so much to where, I mean, it's not even about the money that you could win. It's just the pride. With your friends. And pride's priceless, man.
Now, how seriously do you take it?
I agree with you on that pride thing, but it does have its limits because these guys asked me, as a matter of fact, it's like a couple nights ago, to be in their fantasy basketball league. And I was like, well, what's the buy-in? And they were like, oh, no, there are too many deadbeats in this league. And we're just doing this on pride. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's nothing to win at all?
Yeah, there's no motivation.
I'm like, Giff, seriously, you're like, you guys are not playing for even $50. You're not doing anything. I say, okay, check this out. I don't even want you guys' numbers in my phone. I don't even want my phone infected by knowing you people. So I'm like, I'm in a league now, and it's like, it's the right level where it's like, it's a $350 buy-in.
There you go.
And it's just like, every week there's a payout. Every week there's a $100 payout, and there's a grand prize at the end. So it's like, I'm not one of those guys that needs to get crazy with it, but
it's just enough to keep you motivated.
I'm not going to set my lineup for freaking free. Yeah. Right. I'm not going to do that. Exactly. There's not enough pride in me to do that.
And it's easy to take it to another level. Like, a buddy of mine is so invested in emotionally. Like, and he tried to pitch me on it, like, you know, Seahawks are my team. And I have enough gut-wrenching, depressing years investing them as a fan already. And it's like, to take on all these other teams, like, I literally picked him up to go to a show the other night. And he gets in the car, and he's just like, he's just all down like this, and he's just like, and I was like, dude, and he's a real happy, peppy guy. I was like, right. Dude, Mark, you all right? And he's like, yeah, it's just, I don't want to talk about it, man.
Oh, I know.
And he was like,
you took that in.
I was like, dude, is something like wrong with your family? I immediately go to some sort of bad scenario, and he's like, nah, it's, I lost in two of my leagues today, dude. And I was like, dude, I felt like if I had been like, is it your mom? He'd be like, yeah, she's in the hospital. She's not going to make it. But, dude, the Bears didn't, you know, I feel like it was that type of.
I started the Bear defense instead of the Packer defense. I'm idiot.
Yeah, dude, like, but what about your mom? Yeah, it's going to spread, but I didn't cover the spread. You know,
the thing about fantasy is that in order to be a really good fantasy player, you have to treat the players like hoes. You can't have.
Can we quote that somewhere?
You can't.
I want that on a bumper sticker.
You got it. You have to be disciplined, and you have to hit it and quit it, and you can't. Yeah.
Jaleel White's Guide to Fantasy Football.
Treat your players like hoes. It's you can't have man crushes. Like my season's not over because I did some other stuff in late rounds that are helping me out in fantasy football right now. Mm. But I will be honest. I was developing a man crush. And at pick number 8, I chose Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
And I knew in my mind that Matt Ryan was going to have a good year.
Yeah.
Because of just how his receivers were developing.
Julio Jones.
And exactly. So I said, everybody kept saying, Julio Jones. So I'm like, hey, if Julio Jones is going to have a year like that, then Matt Ryan's going to do his thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
But my man crush took over, And you know, his you know,
he's charismatic.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a beaming smile.
His big Pepsi smile.
Yeah.
Right. Smile. Said, hey, man, I'm taking Cam Newton to get better numbers last year. And let me tell you something. Like, I practically have tricked off my entire season because Cam is like crying at every press conference now this entire year.
Honestly, being like, yo, this is not how this is not how it's supposed to be going. Cam Newton should be doing better. And you're like, obviously, man, I picked you with the Pepsi smile.
So, you know, that's a prime example of where I didn't go by the numbers. And the numbers told me to
you went with your heart.
Yeah, to pick Stafford or to pick Ryan. And it was like,
because part of you feels like, you know what, like you want him to do so well because you like him.
Yeah.
So you're like, you know, maybe if he knows subconsciously that Jaleel White picked him, then he'll step it up because he knows I can get Matt Ryan.
Right.
But I'm taking that Pepsi smile.
Man, you know, now it's gotten to the point where I think they should just do everything fantasy. Like there should be fantasy in entertainment. Like,
oh,
hey,
they should.
I'm drafting Honey Boo Boo first. That's like the sexy pick right now.
I wish you know what I wish they had? I wish they had fantasy for TV shows.
Yeah.
So to play network exec.
Whoa. Oh,
that would be cool.
Oh yeah.
So like
that would be cool. Like, so I want to put this show up against this show. Like my lineup
right.
would be I would put the X Factor up against up against this show, up against that show.
I'm like picking Mad Men first round. Exactly. I don't give a shit. Yeah. So like then you have you could like bank on shows not making it. So like because, when The Neighbors came out, you'd be like, all right, let's fucking
exactly. So it's like people don't realize, you know, when people don't realize how many stars, moons, and ducks have to line up in order for you to have a successful TV show. Like, not only do you have to do a show that resonates with people, but you got to get a good time slot.
Sure.
The network has to want to promote it.
Good lead in.
And exactly. And God forbid, you cannot be put on Friday or Saturday. You know, it's like, and that's what makes what we did so great, because back then we had TGIF.
TGIF
was a monster.
And there's nothing like that anymore. Like
no,
that, again,
it's not.
And the fact that you were not only in a package like that where it was promoted everything, but every show was dope in its own way,
right?
And leading in, where were you on the lineup again? It was
we were first.
It was you guys and hanging with Mr. Cooper, step by step. Yeah. Oh my God,
that guy was hilarious. You know, I'll never forget when Cody came on to Step by Step. I was so impressed.
Mr. Lambert.
Yeah, I was so impressed with his acting. I was like, man, I want to. We shared directors, so I was like, yo, I want to go meet this guy. This guy's doing a kick ass surfer dude.
Yeah.
And so I go over there and I met Sasha, and I'm like, hey man, it's nice to meet you, man. I was checking you out. He's like, oh man, this is cool.
That's him.
I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, yo, drop the character, motherfucker. We're just hanging out right
now. Yeah. Like, so you know, people don't realize for me, like, you know, I took acting seriously, and I didn't care what I needed to do to become another character.
Sure.
If I changed my hair, if I did whatever, there was no prima donna about what I was doing. But at heart, I was an athlete, and you know, I would have hung out with jocks and probably tried to sell weed in high school. But you know, I knew better than to do those things, given who I was.
What are we talking about? The life story of Adam Ray from age 6 to 9. Right. Yo, would you consider yourself? You were like more towards Stefan, and then Steve was your.
Yeah, it was like even the whole child star thing is really funny. It's like I was never treated like a child star when I was growing up. Like I was the lead dog on our show. Period.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I knew they came to me for the joke, or as we said, the block scene.
Yep.
Every episode of a television show back then had what was considered to be a block scene. And this was the scene that everything is building up to, where the car crashes through the living room or whatever, or, you know, the character turns into Bruce Lee, and it's like, it's the block scene.
Right.
And that, those block scenes always depended on me and ability. Not, you know, oh, he's so cute and I love his hair, but just, you know, hey, come bring the comedy that night.
Sure, because, you mentioned the Bruce Lee scene. There was a scene where you went to the
chamber.
Yeah, the chamber, and you came out. It was Bruce Juice?
Well, we eventually evolved it. At first, it was a souped-up porta potty that I would step into. And then the producers realized that it would be much more convenient if they just invented Bruce Juice, and then I could just transform anywhere. I could just, you know, walk into a pantry and come out.
Yeah. sure, Stefan or Kyle. And you came out as Bruce Lee, and you're doing Bruce Lee, and you, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you had like nunchucks, right?
Yeah, no, it was a great episode, man. Like, I mean,
did you train for nunchucks?
Yeah.
Is that a skill you had in your back pocket?
A very famous stunt coordinator, Gene LaBelle. He used to work with you know, Steven Seagal back in the day and stuff, and he would come onto our show with we would borrow a lot of the stunt guys that were doing Warner Brothers movies on the lot at the time.
Because you shot on the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah, we shot Warner Brothers lot. And so, you know, all those guys that were in fight scenes on Under Siege would then walk right on over and
do Family Matters.
Family Matters fight scenes.
Dude, that's incredible.
Which is great because if they had like kids, that would be the thing that they were impressed with. Like, no, I was just on a battleship with Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Seagal and shit blew up and then, you know, I got to go hang out with Urkel. Tell me more about Urkel.
Yeah, totally. Yo, without being too modest, like, and I mean, no joke, again, like I said, was my favorite show growing up.
I appreciate it.
And I still, even as a kid, I was watching and marveling at how good you were as a child actor. And not just as a child actor, but actor. And like, still, I look back now, like when it's on in syndication or whatever, and it's like, because you see so many child actors nowadays on Disney Channel and everything, and they're just so... I don't know.
Vanilla?
Yeah.
They're not like, playing anything. Dude. They're playing themselves,
so
essentially.
I want to just know from you, like, looking back, like, you have to know, like, I was fucking incredible. Like, you just, dude, you were so, it's mind-blowing to me, man. Like, because the comedy, your timing, comedy's all timing, man. You can't teach that shit. And you can, and obviously you had good writing, right, and the cast to play off of. A lot of things were working for you, but, man, shit, dude. Like, some of the things you were doing are not, most of the things you're doing are not on paper. Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of questions.
Was that a character that, did they have the idea? Did you come with it? Was it a collaboration
of
both?
I mean, really, just to hear you talk like this, man, it makes my existence in the game worth it. Because the only thing nerdy about me is the degree to which I will apply myself when I want to get something right.
Shows, man.
Mm-hmm. So, when I was a kid, I had a really like father-son relationship with our showrunner, our head executive producer. And I really started becoming obsessed, really kind of understanding the nuances of what my character was, what my character, our character relationships were on the show, and how formulaic it was.
Yeah.
It's been done before. And sure. I mean, Steve and Carl are basically, Fred and Barney and Norton and Cramden from Honeymooners. So I've seen... I had seen every Honeymooners episode that they'd ever made. It only made 39. Mm-hmm. By the time I was like 15 years old, and I, could impersonate, Ed Norton, and I got what was going on there. So I started borrowing from these greats. Now, mind you, I had a mom that was not letting me date and go out, so that's what was allowing all of these time.
Sure.
You were studying Abbott and Costello and not trying to bang chicks.
So, when Kobe was in the gym shooting, I was literally at a TV set watching Honeymooners episodes and breaking things down.
That's why he killed it.
And so it's
came off.
So it's like my biggest reward that I get from any of this is when I get a chance to travel around the world and I get a chance to see the influence and how it's still there.
Sure.
I showed you guys a picture.
Yeah,
it's like that.
Yeah,
was,
yeah. Tell so
well, it was, a friend of mine, she went to France this year and she sent back a camera pic of my old character's face, but like it was like behind a whole bunch of graffiti on a wall. Like some guys had just done some graffiti.
And you could tell it had been there for a long time.
And you could tell it had been there.
It started
to peel away.
But
whatever.
The face was right there.
Yeah, I should post it.
You should tweet it out after this. For sure.
I'll tweet it out. But it's a great picture because, that's the picture that just kind of tells me, like, anything is possible. And if you work hard, period. You just work hard.
Sure.
And you pay attention to the nuances, you can touch people in parts of the world that you don't even know you're connecting with.
Yeah, and you didn't know this was happening when you're doing it. You're just like,
no.
You're having fun,
no.
Or are you still able, as a kid going through, obviously all the pressures of TV and the work schedule, but are you just like, hey, this is fun?
Yeah, no, I liked it. Yeah. I liked the pressure.
You liked the laughs early on, right?
I loved knowing that I had it. I didn't even want to play Stefan, I don't know if you know that story. I didn't want to play Stefan. I didn't believe in the character. I thought the character was too plain. And
but the contrast was so wonderful.
And David just kept assuring me, that our executive producer, that Jay, people are going to enjoy the contrast.
The people went ape shit. That first moment
I'm just like, really? I'm just like, yo, I'm just coming in the room basically talking like me, except I'm just over complimenting Carl's fat butt right now. That's really what the character Stefan was. It was like, I just kept telling Carl he was so skinny, and it was like, he would do a little shimmy.
Oh, I like Steve. Laura, you should really marry Steve.
Exactly, and then I would tell Laura how great she smelled, even when she didn't have perfume on.
Right. That was it.
Yeah.
So that was like the character was.
But you couldn't see from the. That's because to you, you're just like, you, there's no way to see the overall global effect
yeah.
when you're doing it week to week.
You can't.
You see the numbers, but you're like, you're not seeing people like me be like, dude, yeah, when you came out and we got to see that complete 180.
Yeah, sure. You know, you can't, bottom line, we can't see ourselves. Most people cannot see you. We can't see ourselves. So, you know, I tend to be a pretty good evaluator of my performances. But at the same time, at the image level, I can still be a dork. You yeah. know, like I didn't get what was the impressions that were being sent out there.
Yeah, and you guys did yours in front of a live audience, right? Yeah, because so you could tell now with some of these sitcoms, so many are just the laugh track and the
they want to cut back on money so much in television right. now that even the shows that do have audiences, the audiences are like, you know, 50 people. Like,
yeah.
I did this in front of 1,000 people a week. You know, it's like.
Yo, and guess, and like, so, you know, Brad and I are stand ups. We travel the country every weekend and every night in LA, and which you should come to shows if you ever want to. But, you know, getting the live immediate response with the laughter
sure.
is what makes it all like.
But it trains you for life. Totally, it trains you for life. It really does. And yeah. I don't think people really understand that that's becoming a lost art form is, you know, I can hear a joke. You know, as it plays out live in front of an audience, and know whether to dial it down, step on this. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
sure.
And
milk certain moments.
You have moments where
yeah.
you just know where you can just milk this moment. I mean, we just had some golden moments. Matter of fact, I saw a guy get cussed out really badly when I was a kid too on the show. As a matter of fact, our director just lit into. I felt so bad because he's a grown man. But mm-hmm. there was a moment that
was
I,
it Waldo?
No, yeah.
Who?
We had a guest actor on the show.
Waldo. Dude, wait.
That's some of the shit you and Waldo would have, man. It was so good.
We had a guest actor on the show, and then I saw a moment for a just, you know, one of those just deadpan takes.
Yeah.
Where you just stare, mm-hmm. and the audience was just going and going and
yeah,
going.
Yeah, just build and go.
And this guy, you know, he was a guest actor,
yeah.
just really just he just went on with the dialogue and took out a chunk.
Oh, God. Mm.
Like he thought that I had forgotten my lines.
Because we were milking a pause.
Because I was milking a pause.
Oh, wow.
And so he just decided to help me out. And whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man, director yelled cut. And John was like, what the F are you doing?
Oh, yeah,
he knows what he's doing. I'm like, I'm literally like, you know, 18 years old patting this like 40-something-year-old guy on the back. Like,
wow.
Like, dog, don't worry about it. We'll do it again.
Don't you know who he is? He's on Urkel Hose. Where's your cereal?
This guy knows Charles Oakley, motherfucker. All right.
I can nail it just the same way. It was like, but I'll never forget that night.
Yeah. Some of those moments with you and Waldo, where I mean, like those long, where the audience, you could tell, was just like on board, like where you would call him out for something stupid, and you just be like, Waldo, and he was like, yeah. "Sup?" Yeah. And there's just that moment where you knew, and it was just you were waiting for you to call him out for it, but it was like,
it was built so many. I mean, and we talked about the whole debut of Stefan. Like you can't get that reaction with a panned. With the pan machine, just you walking out of that thing, and just the audience going, shit. Like they would just go crazy, and then that I feel that as a guy watching the show, that helps me as a viewer, because you definitely get more into it, and even though those 1,000 people aren't in the room with you, you still feel like you're a part of it.
No, but let me tell you something, man. At the end of the day, performing is energy, man.
Mm-hmm.
People feed off of energy. So an audience can give me a certain amount of energy. Even when I did that Bruce Lee show, a lot of people don't know, I was deathly sick that night. I had to be rushed to the hospital as soon as that was done.
Get out.
I was puking up my brain.
Actual sick, not mom.
Not
mom teaching you a lesson. Yeah. Not, I need some Blockbuster gifts.
I was puking my brains out. I was down to the bile at that point. And you know how you'll throw up, though, and like literally for like a few moments right afterwards, you feel great?
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
You think
sometimes you're like, there it
you
is.
You think
that's
you're good.
Need.
That
yeah,
was
yeah.
it. That was what you needed. It was like, that's what happened. They were going to cancel the show, but that was the last scene of the night.
Mm-hmm.
There was actually one more scene afterwards, but we could have shot that then whatever. And I didn't want to lose the momentum of the crowd. And I literally hurled, and David was like right next to me. I'm sitting in a Bruce Lee wig, throwing up in a toilet. And
dude, puked and rallied. You did what most college girls will do on a weekly basis.
I rallied, baby. Pull that hair back, girl. Let's go.
The entire tried out sorority right now is like, oh my God, he's totally me. We have so much more in common. He knows what to do. Oh,
This is so cool. I can't even tell you
the worst of my stories, man.
You have to come back.
I've lived a great life, man. You know, I've been able to travel. That was the thing I'm probably most proud of. I was able to do in my 20s, though, as a result of the things that I did, and you know, in television, I was able to spend a lot of time going overseas, visiting wonderful countries, and doing it right, and then just, you know, really collecting some really hilarious stories.
Those are the perks, right?
Those are the perks of what
the business and what you're, because of who you are and what you're doing, opens up for you. And getting to travel like that. I mean, you're saying, like, now getting to go and see the effect of it, and you say you talk to college kids and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. I love talking to kids, man. And I love dropping the real on them. You know, I don't feel like a lot of people talk to kids real.
They don't, man.
Well, sure, no, not sugarcoated. Not in this generation. This is the generation of everybody gets a trophy, everybody's special, everyone's wonderful.
It's so funny you even said that, too, because, like, you know, my daughter's 3 years old, and it's like she's starting to play games now and start to understand the rules a little bit.
Sure.
And so tic-tac-toe is her game. But I play with it on her iPad. Now, what's really hilarious is I'm like, okay, at what point do you teach your kids you're going to lose?
Right, of course.
So it's like she loves to what happens is we start playing. And then I'll put you on. She'll put an X, and then I'll put an O, and then she'll put another X right there. And then I'll buy a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and
dude,
I want all.
Face
I, all
must
I said,
be priceless.
Right?
What?
No. It was a breakthrough. Like literally, it was tears and crying and everything because just getting. And I said, no, I'm going to block her one time.
Yeah.
After that, I'm going to let her win.
Totally.
But I'm going to block her at least one.
Sure. Let her feel it for a moment.
So
problem solved.
Right, exactly. So I would block her. And then she started getting better, and she started picking up the game.
Mm-hmm.
So then I tried to, you know, take it to another level and block her twice. And then, you know, she did. She took my hand. She said, Daddy, no, I'm going to help you. She said, you go here. And she's orchestrating the win for herself. And it's like, and she'll do it with her grandmother. She'll do everything. Now, if she loses any more than twice, two times in a row, that's when she starts to help you.
Sure.
And if she loses any more than three times in a row, time to shut down the game, move on to another activity.
And
it's like, I see this at 3 years old, and I'm like, whoa, you know, it's like, what just a weak-ass generation. Like,
right.
I almost want to go in hard and be like, yo, check this out. You will never win this game.
Yeah, you're going to lose nine in a row, bitch. You don't even know. I'm going to beat you in tic-tac-toe, kerplunk, connect four, Candyland. You ain't never going to the chocolate
mountain. We don't have any fucking Uno over
here. Well, because what happens is the comedy occurs, and she has a little friend, Isabella, and I love Isabella, but the comedy occurs when it's like, okay, Isabella and Samaya are about to play tic-tac-toe, and both of them are conditioned to win.
Oh, boy.
And it's like, to watch it happen, it's a thing. Like, both of them, you know what they started? The game just devolved into both of them trying to press the spots faster.
That's funny.
They weren't even waiting for each other's turn. Like, yeah, they were just like, I got three in a row.
But at least you get instilling that feeling of competition, though, at an early
age. It turned into a race. It's just like, who gets
good? That's what life is.
Tic-tac-toe has never been more competitive.
That's what life is. That's the race.
Right? So I'm like, man, you know, what age am I going to tell this little girl? You can lose if you do not prepare.
Yeah, because guess
what? You have to at some point, man. You can't go along just patting them on the back being like, oh, you peed in the toilet. Good job. Like, you know, I mean, which you have to congratulate him.
Daddy prepared.
I still can't make it all the way in. But
Daddy came in for one episode. One fucking episode. And Daddy turned it into a damn career. So she's got to do that.
It's crazy, man.
Oh, man. Well, it's great that you're in that you're viewing that and not just being like, oh, no, she'll win every time.
Well, you got to split the difference because you got to give them a reason to compete. But I know the breaking points where it's like, if I beat her three times in a row, she ain't even going to play the game no more.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's because if you give her that feeling of seeing what it's like to lose for a moment, then that's when they motivate themselves to go, well, I didn't like that feeling.
Right.
Now I want to try again
right.
so I can win. I mean, that's why when we start doing stand-up, we're doing open mics, that's where you really figure out if this is for you. You do it and you're like, okay, well, that didn't go very well.
Yeah,
and either it brings you down and you go, well, I don't ever want to feel that again. Or you go, I don't want to feel that again, so I'm going to get better and I'm going to start getting
ass. There's a difference between a heckler and somebody telling you you suck for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Wow. Some guy not even in stand-up just got it perfectly because I've seen so many guys come off stage like, man, this is a shitty-ass crowd.
Shitty
they were all
crowd.
telling me
really?
I suck, hecklers and
maybe
stuff like
that. Heard jokes about airplane peanuts before, you stupid
nah,
shit.
Nah, bro. Five or six hecklers is just an unhappy crowd. Crowd, homie.
five or six echoes. These guys were terrible tonight. I don't know what it was about my Honey Boo Boo material, my Charles Oakley jokes, and my blockbuster.
I'll let you throw out one or two people for drinking too much, but after that, homie, you got to go back to the drawing board, get you some material.
Now, well, then, speaking of the whole competition thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, did you ever play actually against Jordan basketball, like one-on-one?
Yes, I did.
Now I know filmed, how competitive Jordan
he
is.
He filmed Space Jam on Warner Brothers lot.
Yo, how incredible is that movie?
And
I'm dead. You know what? I said that. Here's the thing. Nobody has ever said that about Space Jam, and that's why you fucking guys both laughed right there. But
no,
I'm serious.
I laughed because I lived on the lot that summer, so I just know things that I was able to see, and it was just.
You
like,
have Space Jam stories?
They cleared off. They cleared all. They made all of the TV executives park in the structure that summer because they brought in what was tantamount to a Cirque du Soleil tented indoor basketball court for Michael to train, because that was the summer that he came back and got beat by Orlando.
Yep.
Then he trained and then he won three more.
Shouldn't have wore 45.
He trained on exactly. He trained on Warner Brothers lot because that was the summer that they shot. That was the stipulation.
Yeah.
He would only do the movie if he could train on the lot.
Wow.
And so they brought in Long Beach State's court and air conditioned it, and they had weight equipment in there and everything. And literally, like every day after work for that summer, I would just go straight to the Jordan Dome. It was just kind of called the Jordan Dome, and they let me in because they had security outside. And you walk in there, and it's like Grant Hill, Reggie Miller, Dennis Rodman.
He's not even a Piston at that point.
Wait a minute. No, he was a Piston at that point.
Unreal.
He was with the Pistons
those
at that point
still.
Those
first two seasons, goddamn it.
And it was just like, it was an all-star
Ewing,
game.
Ewing, Barkley.
I don't know.
No.
No, actually, no, they were. What are you talking about?
They're in the movie.
They're in the movie.
David Robinson? No.
Yeah. It was just like an all-star game every day.
And you were playing with them.
You know, the all-star. This is what happened. They would, if they would let certain people play until too many NBA players would show up.
Yeah.
And then when a certain number of NBA players would show up, you know, Michael would literally just, like, stop everybody and make an announcement. Because, you know, like, Damon Wayans would be in a corner, like, you know, stretching and shit. He's like, you ain't coming out here right now.
Homie the Clown ain't not getting court time with Barkley.
I don't know if you saw, but Michael Cage is here from the Seattle Supersonics.
Right, and so what happens is, because you got to understand, this is Hollywood. The egos of motherfuckers is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
And you would get people that were, like, you know, on TV shows calling next, and Rod Strickland is waiting. And so
Jordan's like, look, this is our game.
Yeah, MJ would have to tell people, like, look, check this out. If there's an NBA player ever in this gym, they're stepping on the court in the very next game. And when we get
it's
to
a brotherhood at that point.
Yes.
Jordan's like, it's a
And when
man.
We get to the point where there's any more than 6 to 7 NBA players on the court, then we're going to do something professional, and we just hope that he's really charismatic. We would hope that you guys would respect that and understand that. And he was like, even still, Damon would be like, all right, cool. I'll go two down.
I'll go two down.
Dude, he sells Hanes, McDonald's, and Gatorade. He clearly can sell. I mean, that's incredible.
So those games were just.
But you got in a few before.
Yeah. No, he got in a few. And matter of fact, I even had a free throw shooting contest with him. And I ended up gambling with him, but he told me to keep the money.
You gambled in a basketball competition against Michael Jordan.
Go buy yourself some suspenders.
You know, I think you subconsciously want to pay him. You know, he's just
sure.
Like, I lost. Yeah. Here, take $100.
Here's my money, Michael Jordan. Put it on red.
And he was so cool about it. It was actually, he likes to shoot free throws.
Blindfolded.
With his eyes closed.
Yeah.
And so, if your form is right, you can actually hit a bunch of them in a row.
Yeah.
And I think I went like actually 2 out of 5. And then, of course, he goes like 4 out of 5. And, you know, I was like, all right, reach in my pocket to give him, you know, to give him the 20. And he's like, come on, man, I'm not taking your money, Jay. I do this.
Now, how did Bugs Bunny ever get to play?
Like, what's wrong with you, Doc? What's wrong with you?
You know, I'm glad you said that to me right there, because if you'd gone along with it, then
what's wrong with you? I know we all want zingers, but we just not go for shit, Doc. We not go for shit.
Yo, Michael Jordan, though. I mean, and this is a question I have, I think, for most the physique's like ridiculous, right? They're on another level.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, like,
they're just like galloping horses, man. Seriously, I mean, they make the entire court in like 4 strides. You know, that's. That's really what it is.
As a dwarf, I'm extremely jealous because it takes me about 9,432, and like in rapid succession, like you know the clip when Bugs like starts to run and then the legs just start moving, but he's not going anywhere. That's me, like all the time.
I don't, you know, from a basketball perspective, I don't know what the highest level that you've played, but like you know, like Penny Hardaway was like an older brother to me also, so I would
Jesus.
Go and I would go play ball with them in Memphis at the Fieldhouse. And in the summer times, too. Anywhere between 18, 19,
By the 20, way, 20. Side note, the Urkel doll could totally outball
Little Penny.
Let's
establish that
little
right
Penny
now. Urkel doll kicking the ass of Little Penny in the game of 1-on-1.
You know, that'd be a great retro commercial.
Wouldn't it? Jesus.
That was probably the best game I've ever played in, though, was a summer game with Penny with a bunch of players from the Globetrotters and from Memphis and a couple of NBA cats. And I had like three guys on my team that could just, you know, including Penny, that I could just throw the ball anywhere near the rim. And it was an alley-oop.
Because
that's what's going to happen in pickup ball.
Sure.
And, you know, I got a chance. When these guys are this long, and you're this, you know, your size is put into reality. Uh-huh. You know, you.
Hey, why you gotta look at me, motherfucker?
You know, let's not talk about size and reality in the same sense, Julio. That's,
Mom says I'm a big boy.
When your size is put into reality, you know, you realize how much skill it takes to even get to the hole. Like, you're just not even going to make shots where it's a layup, where you just get the ball off the glass and it goes into the hole, because the guys are just too long, they're going to get there. And, you know, you suddenly can respect the skill level of somebody like a Derrick Rose or something like that. And it's like everything he shoots in the paint is a floater.
Yeah, right.
Because you're not going to get all the way to the hole.
That's why he's so big with those jump stops.
Exactly. And, when the length just becomes that. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I actually kind of miss from those days. You know, is you know, it made you respect the game more.
Oh, sure.
I remember I was in a charity game with Donovan McNabb.
Jesus.
And in Chicago.
Was he eating Campbell's soup beforehand?
And, you know what? You a fool for that. That's so funny because I went to a comedy store one night, and it was me and it was Donovan and it was a couple other cats, and this comedian just went in on him with the Chunky Soup commercials. And it was like, and it was funny because I'm sitting right there next to him. I'm sitting there right next to him, and it was like, that was the moment where I realized, I don't care how you're famous, there's always somebody out there that can come up with something dumb to say to you.
Of course.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he did like 10 minutes of Chunky Soup commercials.
Well, that's a little excessive.
And just went in on his mom and everything. It was like, wow. It was like really to the point where it was almost kind of uncomfortable. Like, yo,
for
man.
Sure,
like,
dude. You know, well, first of all, dude, I would never even bring it up.
Yeah, like, we came here to be entertained.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you almost got to go in your gangster voice. Like, yo, son.
Donovan's like, I can make one phone call.
Yeah, that's mad rude, man.
Is that how you would address somebody if they do, if they called you out for some shit in a comedy show?
You know, I mean, I play it cool. I mean, I take solace in knowing that, you know, I've done something they're still trying to do half the time. So
there you go.
You know,
scoreboard, motherfucker. Where's your doll?
Where's your doll? That should be your comeback every time.
You know,
where's your doll, motherfucker?
I respect stand-up comedy for what it is so much. Dude. Exactly. Scoreboard, man. Mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely.
Keep the show going, man. Keep
exactly.
the show going.
Yeah, perfect, man.
Could this have gone any better, do you think?
Dude, this was unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Well,
you guys going to treat me to lunch, or are you going to make me pay for my own?
No, for sure.
I'll treat you to lunch,
man.
Don't
like
worry.
I said, Popcornopolis, man. You got cheddar. You got cheddar. You got
caramel. Caramel's in there. Yeah. Don't forget. Any stuff that you want to plug right now?
Where's your Twitter at?
Man, I'm at Jaleel White. You know, my Twitter feed sounds pretty much just like what we're talking about right now. All this stuff. I'm a sports junkie, but at the same time, I love commenting on life. And, you know, Total Blackout, man. Tomorrow night, October 30th on Sci-Fi
Channel.
We're back. The couples episodes are better than ever.
Couples episodes.
Yeah, we have couples episodes.
Shit,
we got moms on with their sons.
That's gonna be perfect.
You know, and the moms telling the sons to man up. And, you know, it's,
wow.
It's gonna be Total Blackout is gonna be great this season. I'm grateful for the show, but more importantly, I'm grateful people just enjoy it. You know, there's an aspect of entertainment that I think is being lost to just straight egotism, and that's people wanting attention, and that is the fact that what I do is not for me, it's for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the one art form out there where it's kind of like, you know, I only care so much how it turns out, you know, and it's about how you think it turned out.
Right.
Ah. That's some philosophical bombs being dropped by Jaleel White over here. Well, Jaleel, it was an absolute pleasure, absolute honor. It was fun as hell. Like, sometimes we're pulling teeth with guests, but with you, it was just flawless. It was great.
Yeah, dude, the given, I mean, it's, some people get, I don't want to say intimidated, because it's not like we're fucking Carrot Top over here.
No, but you guys both have deep voices, and with the side thing, that kind of threw me.
Yeah, let me ask that real quick. Did you, because I didn't go, I didn't send an email and be like, yo, tell Jaleel, by the way, my co-host is a dwarf. I didn't say that. So when you first walked up, were you like, oh.
No, I'm actually happy you didn't say that to my manager. Otherwise, you might have got shut down.
Obviously, dude. Why would I do that? He's my best friend.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, he a grown-ass man.
Yeah. 28, motherfucker.
Yeah, you know how many kids Brad's beat up at a playground?
You know, but multiple. Midget UFC. I throw a mean forearm shiver.
You know, but if you had sent a picture of him dressed up as a leprechaun to my manager and said, we want to do an interview with Jaleel White, he might not have gotten back to you so fast.
There you go. It works out. Yeah, well, I'm glad I can come in with a deep voice and that's not good.
Last total blackout. All right, I love it.
Total Blackout airs sci-fi
Tuesday nights at 10/9 Central. Look at your DVRs. Check it out. Jaleel White.
You
got to
come back and talk hoops with us, man. Once the NBA season gets rolling, man. Because we didn't even scratch the surface.
You know what we should do? I'll tell you what we do. We'll talk hoops, and then you and I should trade chick stories.
Oh, that is done.
We'll go. But we got to put a prize on it. See who has the best chicks.
Yo, there we go.
Oh, my God.
I think me and you could go head up on some real fun life experience.
Let's go. You know what? That is a day.
Because I want to know your chick story. Oh, I know you got some.
You're going to know, my friend. I got one this weekend that I'm going to tell on the next podcast.
You don't want to know
it's
the 6-foot Jew sex stories? I mean, I got a couple in the bag here.
Your stories are ready. They like your hair already.
Fuck. All right, fair enough.
Jaleel goes straight to the midget porn, and that's why I like him.
I mean, but that's clearly more interesting.
Well, we will do that absolutely on a future episode. Adam, plug your stuff.
AdamRayTV.com, at AdamRayComedy on Twitter, and I will be the Lake Tahoe Improv next Wednesday, November 7th through the 11th.
There you go. And myself, I'm at Funny Brad, BradWilliamsComedy.com. I got dates coming up at the Columbus Funny Bone, going up to Merced, California. And then I'm doing this thing. I'm actually going to be announcing the Red Bull Flugtag competition in San Francisco. That's where guys like make homemade gliders and they like go off Fisherman's Wharf or whatever.
A lot of chicks there.
Yes.
Whoa, some stories definitely to pull from the Red Bull series.
I will have Red Bull stories, everyone.
On an all-new About Last Night, it'll be Jaleel versus Brad.
Guys, Jaleel, thank you for being here. And guys, thank you for listening. This has been probably the best episode of the About Last Night show. Please try to remember our names in the morning.
Love it.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.